What is up, everybody? Welcome to this week's episode of the Dense Pixels Podcast. I'm your host, Brad, joined by my co-host this week, Carrie.
What's up?
Back after a long music-filled hiatus.
Yeah, had a lot of gigs. I've got an orchestra gig this week. It's not like I've stopped. I just haven't been on in a while and happy to be back. I'll say that much.
So we are light on news, but we will still be heavy on content because my gaming ADD is in full fucking effect right now. Because I'm like the dude that, like, you know, I'm getting ready to eat at this very fine dining establishment in a month. I'm very ready to have one of the best meals of my life because, you know, Street Fighter and Diablo 4 come out like a week apart from each other. And EA, because their dicks decided to throw Super Mega Baseball 4 into that mix as well. So I'm really fucked for the entire month of July and beyond. So I'm trying to clean up like all this other shit right now that I'm playing. So like I've been playing, you know, I talked on the show a couple weeks ago about playing Legend of Heroes, and that's still really fun getting started into that. And I'm still playing Ease 8, and I'm still fucking around with Slay the Spire, because of course, and a few other things here and there. But there's two other games that I wanted to check out, one of which is the newest game from, I can't remember the fucking company's name, but it's the same folks that make...
Hoyo?
Yeah, that sounds like... Hoyoverse, I think is what it's called. The same folks that make Genshin Impact. They just came out with their new game last week, which is called Honkai Star Rail, which is... look, it's very much in the same vein. They're setting out to do the same thing as they did with Genshin Impact, except it's a turn-based RPG set in anime space, and you'll be pulling the slot lever for all of your waifus and husbandos as much as you possibly can. So it is very much an RPG. The one thing I will say about this game, much like Genshin Impact, the production values are off the charts, right?
Sure.
Visuals are great. Music is great. The voice acting is good. I was going to say passable, but that it's better than passable. It's just not my cup of tea, right? Like, it's a bunch of anime bullshit going on. So, like, the voice acting is good for what it is. And the hook of this game, for me, personally, was the combat system. Because it's a very, very, like, stripped-down JRPG combat system. So the way it works is, you know, you're walking around in these very small areas that you're in, and there's enemies on the map, and you can attack them on the map, and each enemy has, like, a weakness, right? Like, it's very, like, Octopath Traveler-y, where all of your party members are a member of this, like, one path, right? And the paths, like, translate basically to elements, essentially. Like, you know, there's, like, a fire one, there's an ice one, there's a physical one, there's a, you know, lightning one, et cetera, et cetera. And many enemies are weak to multiple types of these elements, right? And so if you attack an enemy on the map, if they're weak to the person who you have, like, portraying your character on the screen, then you actually start the battle at an advantage. And the battle system is very similar to Octopath Traveler, where you want to hit enemies with attacks that they're weak to in order to break their guard, because then you can do additional damage to them. Sure. The difference is, in this game, they just tell you what the enemies are weak to. You don't have to, like, suss it out like you do.
Oh, okay. In Persona or something like that.
Yeah, like they will tell you straight up. They're like, this dude is weak to these three elements. You're like, okay, cool. I have someone in my party that can do that, so let me make this happen. Each character, you have four characters in your party. Each character has two attacks. They have one just regular attack, and then they have one special attack, which sometimes is just like a multi-hit single enemy attack. Sometimes it's like an AoE. There's some characters that deal like status effects. There's some characters that buff your party. It is very much what you would expect to see. And again, you are trying to whittle these enemies down. You're trying to break their guard so that you can deal heavy damage to them. They still will attack you, of course, as well. So you have to, you know, worry about that as you go through. Each character also has an ultimate, and the ultimates are very fast and very frequent. You will get them a ton, which is good because they do a shitload of damage. And it's great because you don't have to keep them in your back pocket, because you're going to get one every, like, 2 to 3 battles anyway per character. So pretty much every battle you fight, one of your people is probably going to trigger an ultimate in some way, shape, or form. And it's basic, but it's quick. Like, I like that it's quick. I like that it's fun. And when you kill enemies, they don't give you EXP. They give you items. That's all you get from That's all you get from the enemy drops. And so you're going around in this RPG universe. The look of it feels very much like a Tales game to me. But then we get to the systems in the game. And boy, howdy, as you'd expect from a free-to-play game in the year of our Lord 2023, there are a lot of systems running underneath the hood of Honkai Star Rail. There are so many resources in the game that you can earn, and they all do such different things. I mentioned that enemies don't give you experience when you kill them. What they do give you is items, and then you can use those items to level up your character outside of combat. You don't do it through normal fighting. You do it by pumping items into them. And it's kind of cool because you can, like, just dump a shitload of items on one character and have them go up 10 levels, like, very quickly if you want to, and that's fine. But, of course, your progress is then gated by the frequency to which you will pick up the specific items that you need, unless, of course, you want to go into the microtransaction store and pay real money to buy them, which is always an option. Fortunately, in the early stages of the game, it's plentiful. There's plenty of things to go around. You also, each character, the only thing you can equip on them is what they call a light cone, which is not a weapon, it's not an armor, it's just a thing. It's a trait, almost, that you put on your character, and it buffs your stats, and it gives you a passive. And there's a shitload of these to collect as well, in addition to all the different characters that you can collect. And you can level these up, too. And they level up the same way. They use a different item that you can use to level these things up. And you can also consume other light cones that you have to pump into them, which is good because you really only need one of each light cone. And, of course, you get multiple as you pull the slot machine lever of the same one because that's how these things work. And so those are your two, like, primary things that you're leveling up with your character as you go through the game. But each vendor also has all sorts of items that you can buy. And these items can be used for characters that follow a specific path to help them level up and engage and things like that and do sorts of and those sorts of things. There are experience tracks, or I shouldn't say experience tracks, there are progress tracks out the wazoo in this game. There's a battle pass. There's a daily, you know, daily task list that you can fulfill. There's, you know, there's a side quest task list that you can fulfill. There's your main, what they call your trailblazer level, which is your kind of your progress through the main story, if that makes sense. And there's a shitload of, you know, side content to do. Some of it is like repeatable stuff that you're intended to do every day. Some of it are just like normal fetch quests, side quests that you find in RPG. And then you literally have the golden path. They call it the trailblazer path. You have it's, but it's literally those icons are bracketed in gold because that's the main way through the game. Mm-hmm. Now, where I'm stuck on this is when you go through, like, you can kind of choose what content you engage with to a point. Sure. Because at some points during the Golden Path, and now keep in mind, like, I'm in the second area of the game, like the second story area of the game. They will gate you on your Trailblazer level before you can even start certain quests. Like, you have to get your Trailblazer level up to a certain level before you can begin certain quests in the main story. It is literally a progress gate to stop you from just mainlining the main story and to force you to go check out the side content, essentially. Sure. Which is essentially the stuff that's going to keep you there every day. Because once you're done the main story, that's it. And you have to wait for new story lines to come out, which will come out eventually. But they want you logging in every day. So they want to push you as much as they can towards the side content. And that really ticked me off this early in the game to kind of run into that level gating. And then, of course, you know, the biggest thing about this game, it's a fucking gacha game. So, like, you are literally pulling the slot machine to try to get new characters, to try to get new light cones. You're chasing after five-star characters, five-star light cones. How is a five-star better than a four-star? I don't fucking know. I just know it looks better, and it gives you, like, a pretty thing when you pull the slot machine, and a five-star pops out. What are your odds of getting a five-star? Pretty shitty. Like, it's pretty bad. I don't know what your odds of getting a character are anyway, every time you pull the lever, but your odds of getting a five-star character are 1 in 20 when you get a character. So, like, if your odds of getting a character are 20%, let's say, when you just pull the lever, then your odds of getting a five-star character are 1%. You literally have, like, a 1 in 100 chance of pulling a five-star character, which is what everyone is chasing. Now, they have, like, the starter slot machine that you can start on that's limited, where you're guaranteed to get a five-star pool within, like, 50 tickets, which is not a lot of tickets. Like, you can spend that pretty quickly. So, like, you have a guaranteed path to one five-star. But again, that's just to get you hooked because they want you to go to the regular slot machine and hit that fucking lever and watch the train go off into the distance and it comes back with the sparklies and, like, and everything in this game. Like, every achievement, like, you get progress points for achievements and every time you click an achievement, the little claim thing explodes. Ding, ding, ding. Yeah, like it is engineered to be a just consistent and steady and subtle endorphin drip into your head to keep you just clicking and playing and grinding.
And that's why
playing.
I don't play right. Gacha
and then eventually you will, you know, get desperate enough, hopefully, that you spend actual real money to be able to pull the slot machine, and that's kind of what they're hoping that you do. With games like this, like, I've played a ton of games like this. Like, I've talked, you know, I played Immortal through the campaign. I played Puzzle Quest 3 for a good 40 hours before I fell off. So, I always know going into these games, because I don't want to spend any real money, or as little as possible, that there is a shelf life for me. Like, there's going to be a point where I bounce off of this. And hopefully the game is fun enough to kind of keep my attention for, you know, dozens of hours until I get to that point. I wasn't expecting to, like, run into that. Within like 5 hours in Honkai Star Rail. Like within 5 hours, I'm just like,
yeah, that's pretty quick.
I mean, it really pissed me off that they were just like, hey, like, I know you want to do the main story, but we would actually rather you do this other thing for a while before you come back and do the main story. Like, if I want to do the main story, fucking let me do the main story. Like, right. You know, like, give me a good experience. I don't want to do the side content. These fetch quests suck. Because it's literally go talk to this character about some bullshit that you don't care about, go fight two or three enemies, and then come back and report to this character, and they give you a quest complete, and you gain some experience, and you know, go on about your day. That's the thing that's interesting about this. So, like, Genshin, I haven't played it, but I've seen it before, and it's basically like a Breath of the Wild allegory. It's like, what if we made Breath of the Wild a gacha game? I can see where you can get people sucked into that sort of experience. The interesting thing with Star Rail is that this is based on a fairly rudimentary combat system. Like, that's the gameplay hook that keeps you in. And if you're like me and you don't really care about the story, and you haven't really grown fond of one of the characters, and you don't care what's going on in the world around you, because the areas are small, like, they're really tiny, they're pretty linear. So it's really just the gameplay. It's really just getting into these turn-based battles that last like 2 minutes each. And just kind of clicking through the motions. And if that's fun, then you're going to stick around. And it's fun, but it's not that fun. Like, that gets pretty repetitive and monotonous. So I'm going to be very interested for folks that aren't as into the story to see, like, if people, like, hang around with this. And they do a good job of, like, putting lore into the game. And, like, there's a lot of shit that you can suss through with that if you care. But if you don't, then this is just a very complicated, pretty, intricately designed slot machine, because that's
so,
what it is.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Here's what I know about Honkai Star Rail is weekend before, I was in New York to see Sweeney Todd on Broadway with my best friend. See, apparently, side note, quick tangent, seeing Sweeney Todd on Broadway right now is a really easy way to learn who in your friends and family is a big fan of Josh Groban. I have learned so much of my extended family's love of Josh Groban.
Is he in it or did he score it?
He's Sweeney Todd. He's fabulous in it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's like, I've been telling people, like, oh yeah, I saw Sweeney Todd on Broadway, and they're like, oh, Josh Groban, oh my god. But, you know, in order to get to the theater, we had to walk through Times Square. And currently, or at least 10 days ago in Times Square, there was a Honkai Star Rail train. And so I had my photo taken with the train because I thought it was funny. So my connection to Honkai Star Rail is there's a photo of me, and I'll send it to you, in the rain in front of the train that I guess brings you your fucking JPEGs, your five star PNG waifu, with an enormous American flag in the background. And
hilarious.
Because few things scream American capitalism like gacha games.
That's true. I mean, one could argue. it is perhaps the most capitalistic thing that has ever been imported into our country, if you think about it. Yeah, like, if you care about the story, like, you join a party of like, space rangers, essentially, that are flying around to different planets on this astral train, because there's this bad thing that's in the universe. I don't know. It's called a Stellarian. I don't know why it's bad yet. Maybe it's too early in the game, but
you know what that is? That's some anime bullshit.
It is some anime bullshit. I'm really just enjoying Legend of Heroes though. So like I'm gonna continue playing that and not worry about playing
Honkai Star Rail.
Yeah.
Yep.
I have not uninstalled it yet. Or wait, did I? Maybe I did. I can't remember if I did or not. We'll see.
Well, look, I haven't been playing anything new. I mean, look, the latest title update for Monster Hunter Rise came out.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as in hindsight, like, God, Monster Hunter World was a much harder game in terms of like its end game content than Rise has been. Because I just remember them dropping like Alatreon and Fatalis as like the last monsters, and it's like, for as much as I threw myself at Fatalis, I only cleared Fatalis like maybe two or three times. Mm-hmm. And it took us a long time to get that first clear. And I cleared this fucking dude. Title update 5 for Sunbreak. Yeah, they're like, the fearsome elder dragon Amatsu, and I was like, this is gonna suck. And then like we did it in one go, and I was like, not that hard. Either one of two things is occurring here. Either I have somehow become very good at Monster Hunter, or Amatsu isn't that hard. And I'm going with Amatsu just isn't that hard.
I mean, you have put in over 300 or 400 hours in Monster Hunter at this point. Yes? Total. I'm talking about between World and Rise. Maybe more.
Monster Hunter World, I put 484 hours in. And Monster Hunter Rise on Steam, I have 168 hours in, but that's on top of like the 50 or 60 hours that I had on the Switch version. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, look, if you just want to say that I'm like the best Lance main on Earth, maybe that's true.
There are so few of you that it stands to reason that you might be up at the top of that list. Because there's probably more gun lance mains, right? Because it's way more cool to have a gun with your lance than just a lance.
No, it's not. Fuck gun lance. Look, if you want to argue with me about Monster Hunter, if you want to chide Brad for spending time, any amount of time on anime, weeaboo, gacha game, BS on his phone, you can do that on our Discord. Our Discord is live at densepixels.com/fans. It's a fun place. We talk about games. We talk about soccer. We talk about F1 racing. A lot of wrestle talk recently too. It's
continued to be a good time in WWE. So
I have ignored it. and while you're on the internet, head to youtube.com/densepixels and subscribe. And you can see our beautiful faces. I wanted to show you my new cat. Mr. Friday, and he's currently being a terrorist in the other room, so can't do anything about that. I want to show, but you know, make sure that you are also subscribing to all of the TNP Studios podcasts wherever you get your podcasts, including the Nerdpocalypse, Black on Black Cinema, Coming Distractions, and the weekly preview episode of Look Forward. And look, if you want to help us keep the lights on, go to densepixels.com/premium for $5 a month or $50 for the year. That gives you the entire premium slate of podcasts on top of the regular free nonsense. So you get the Airing of Grievances, No Time to Bleed, The Men with the Golden Tongues, Upstage Conversation, and the full episodes of the Look Forward Political Podcast.
Very good.
Thanks.
We haven't
Xbox
seen...
Xbox is having a time.
They're having a time. I mean, we talked last week about the fact that the CMA knocked down the proposed merger with them and Activision Blizzard. Mm-hmm. And then we also kind of talked about how Redfall released the disappointing like technical specifications.
That's a bit of an understatement, sure.
Yeah, the game is actually pretty crap.
yeah, it is.
Which is a little shocking considering the development studio that it's coming from. And the publisher, and this was a big deal for Microsoft because this is arguably like one of the first like big budget AAA games that's been released from one of these studios that they've acquired, after we've been waiting and waiting and waiting and being hyped and hyped and hyped. And it's been just trash. Like it has been pilloried. online by every reviewer that I've seen, as it's just not a good game. Like
it just doesn't look like a good or fun game. And it's one thing if the game, like, it's one thing for a game to come out and have like your typical Bethesda level technical issues, but you know, you can still pick up Skyrim and have fun with it in spite of that. You can still pick up, you know, a Fallout and have fun with it in spite of that. But like, Redfall doesn't even have that. Like, the game doesn't run well and also just simply isn't any fun.
Yeah. And it's interesting because so Phil Spencer had a scheduled interview last Thursday on the Kinda Funny XCast. And this was before, like, the CMA thing and before Redfall came out to middling and poor reviews. To his credit, he did not cancel this booking. And he went there and faced the music knowing that he was going to get some tough questions. And I'll give Phil Spencer this. Of the, you know, of the heads of the three big companies, Phil Spencer does seem the most like a person out of the three of them. The other ones seem like very corporate CEO types.
They seem like they have always been given like a a preparation by a very expensive PR firm before any public appearance that they make. Whereas Phil Spencer is just like, all right, here I am. Let's do it.
I'm not going to beat around the bush. Yeah.
I do always like, I have a lot of respect for him in that sense, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah. The thing that he's been sort of like lambasted a little bit about is the fact that he said, we do mock reviews for every game we launch, and this is double digits lower than we thought we were going to be. That's one of the disappointing things. We would never strive to launch a game that we thought was going to review in the low 60s. It's not part of our goals. And I'm like, of course you wouldn't, you know, want to launch a game that you thought was going to review at like a 62 on Metacritic. And I don't think you would come out and say, like, we knew it was going to be this bad and we shipped it anyway.
Later in the interview too, like, he talks about how, like, you know, they're like, why didn't you delay it? And he was like, look, he's like, if it was a case of like bugs and stuff like that, like if there were technical problems in the game, like, yes, you would delay it. But the issues with the game weren't technical in nature. They were just how the game was structured. He's like, so no amount of delaying is going to fix that. So at some point, like, you have to kind of, and I'm paraphrasing what he said, but at some point you have to just kind of cut bait and just kind of get it out there. And take your lumps, I guess, which is an interesting way. It's interesting to hear an executive of a video game publisher kind of lay that bare, because we do talk all the time, like, hey, if your game sucks, just delay it. And it's like, yeah, but at the same time, like, we've already invested.
It's tough because, you know, again, you know, and I get what he's saying there, too, is the fact that, like, you know, our studio had a vision and the vision just, like, isn't landing with the audience. And, like, you can't. At that point, you're back to square one. You're rewriting the game.
The difference isn't delay it and fix it. It's release it or cancel it. And if you cancel it, that's many tens of millions of dollars that you are essentially writing off as a sunk cost. Where you might as well, if you're a game company, try to make up some of that money. Like, they're probably not going to make up all of it with this game because it's pretty fucking bad. But they'll at least get some of that cost back. And it's kind of like releasing a bad movie. Like studios know when a movie is going to be bad and they still put it out there anyway, and they get whatever they can and, you know, and kind of write off the rest. He also kind of talked about how one of the quotes in the interview was, you know, people are so fixated on the games that Microsoft has promised or has been putting out. And he kind of made the point, and again, I'm paraphrasing, I don't have the exact quote in front of me. He said, Starfield could be an 11 out of 10. He's like, and people aren't going to trade in their PlayStations for Xbox all of a sudden. He's like, that's not a realistic thought process. And he made the point, he's like, hey, we lost the most important console generation to lose because people have now built their digital game libraries, and they kind of have this baked in loyalty to one brand or another, because now, like, if you had a PS4 and you bought a shitload of games on the PlayStation Store, all that stuff comes with you to the PlayStation 5. So you already have kind of this built-in game library. And I guess that's, he's making that point to kind of talk about why Xbox has taken the opportunity this console generation to sort of diversify their strategy and worry about getting people where they are, as opposed to trying to get people to buy a $500 box that is going to be a tougher sell, because then you have to buy the games and get into the ecosystem on top of that. So, like I said, it was a weirdly candid interview. And some people were, you know, lambasting him for things that he says. I think some of the people that were criticizing him might have been taking some of the things he said out of context a little bit. Yeah. I think they were kind of viewing those comments unfavorably. I found it pretty refreshing for him to just kind of be out there and be like, yeah, look, like, we know this is a disappointment. We're still, what I also found interesting is he talked about how they're still committed to the game, and committing to trying to improve the game, which, to me kind of is like polishing a turd. And I guess it's good to some extent that you're not just leaving the people that did buy the game and did pre-order the game in the lurch. But I wonder how many of those people really need you to go behind and fix that game. Like, I wonder how many people are just like, look, it's bought, it's paid for, it is what it is, I'm going to move on. Because, like, do you think, you know, if you're one of those people that bought Redfall at launch and kind of see what it is, you really going to come back 4 months from now and take the time to explore that game if it's not meaningfully different?
With how much other shit is coming out this year, what, like, why would you? Why would you go back to it? Like, there's so much good third-party content releasing on the system. So, like, why even bother? You know, I have to imagine most of these people are just going to be like, well, that was a waste of money, and move on.
Yeah.
So.
Agreed. But the part of this that I found probably the most amusing is there's a whole lot of pearl clutching for what this could portend for Starfield now, which seems a little unfair.
It's just like, it seems...
Because they have nothing to do with one another.
Right.
And plus too, Phil also made the point that Microsoft did not really have any oversight on this game, because it was already well in the cooker when they acquired Bethesda and therefore acquired Arkane. And so they didn't really have a lot of influence on it. They've been working hand in hand with Bethesda for a while now on Starfield. So I think that they have a little bit more quality control over what's going on with that game.
Yeah.
But Todd had better come through in November, or whenever that game's coming out. I can't remember.
September.
Is it September? Yeah. Okay. It was originally November, I remember.
So. It was originally November of last year.
Yes, yeah. But they had to push it back. Look, I'm still tentatively curious about about what Starfield's going to be.
I'm buying Starfield day one because I'm a simp.
I'm renewing my Game Pass subscription day one and going to play it. And going to play it that way. So.
Ooh.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm look. Smart. No, I'm gonna fucking buy that shit. You kidding me? Like, of course I am.
Speaking of games in space, so the other games, I guess, two games that I've been playing. So Everspace 2 came out a couple weeks ago, and I never heard of it, but it had been talked about on a few of the podcasts that I listened to. Mm-hmm. And there was a free demo available on Steam that lets you play the first couple campaign missions. And so I checked it out because I heard about it. It's basically a, you know, flying through space, and you're like flying a fighter pilot in space sort of thing. It's really fun. Like, it's really fun to fucking fly in a fucking spaceship. And shoot things and avoid like asteroids and things of that nature as well. Just a good time. Looks really good. The story is kind of threadbare because it's told through these still, like these moving still images, essentially, with voiceover. Yeah. Which is fine because that's not what the game is. The game itself, Everspace 2, is sort of a, what I guess what I would call like a guided open world. Like they have these different little space sectors that you can fly to and do some shit in. Along the way, as you're doing missions and side quests, you can, like, you'll get like a distress signal that you can like veer off the path to go investigate and see, you know, what's going on. And you can find different upgrades for your ship, different weapons, different missiles, different special things like EMPs and things of that nature as well. It's a really good time. So I played the demo for Everspace 2. And I said, I had a lot of fun with this. Saw the game was $50. I'm like, it's fun, but I don't know if it's $50 fun, so let's hold off. But then I went on to the Humble Store and saw that Everspace 1 was on sale for $3 and change. So I'm like, well, fuck, for $3, I'm going to check out Everspace 1.
Right.
Everspace 1 is a completely different game, interestingly enough. So whereas Everspace 2 is kind of like this open world-ish RPG of a space flying game, Everspace 1 is a roguelike. Still the same kind of gameplay, where you're, you know, flying through space, trying to shoot stuff, trying to scavenge and collect and sell and all this other stuff. But it's done with a run-based gameplay style. Still really fun. Definitely, obviously, a step down from Everspace 2 just in terms of presentation and in terms of just overall quality. The studio definitely learned a lot between 1 and 2. But still a really fun game. I still think it's on sale on the Humble Store for, like, uber cheap, if I'm not mistaken. So if you want to... basically, the way I said it, it's what I wanted Star Fox to always be.
Right.
Because I've never liked Star Fox very much. But I've always... I like
the music from
Star Fox. I like the music from Star Fox, too. But I enjoy the allure of flying a fighter plane or a fighter ship around in space and fucking blasting things. But the gameplay for Star Fox never hooked me. This is what I wanted Star Fox to be. So I'm having a tremendous amount of fun with Everspace 1. And when Everspace 2 gets down to, let's say, $30, I will pull the trigger and get me some Everspace 2. Because, like nice. I said, it's a similar style game, but with a little bit more gameplay and a lot more polish, which is very good.
Nice. In very different news.
This is almost a continuation of something that Micah and I talked about last week. So we talked about how Nintendo is going after content creators that are leaking out Tears of the Kingdom stuff. Right. And they are going so hard after content creators that they are just throwing DMCA requests at everyone that they see, including themselves.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious. So basically, if you have a YouTube channel and you're streaming anything, like streaming any gameplay videos of Tears of the Kingdom, if you were not specifically authorized by Nintendo to do so, they are copyright striking your channel at this point. Alana Pierce was doing commentary on a video from SkillUp, who is another YouTube creator, and SkillUp had an authorized preview that he attended to see Tears of the Kingdom, and he did a big long video on it. It's very good. I recommend you check it out if you haven't seen it. And Alana Pierce did commentary about his video, his licensed video, and they were just like, boom, smack, DMCA, get the fuck out of here. What are you doing? There's another YouTuber who, again, they were basically, he shared a screenshot of an IGN preview, and he got a DMCA takedown request of his tweet for anti-piracy from Nintendo of Japan. And again, this came to such a head that there was a tweet yesterday on the official Nintendo Zelda Twitter account in Japan that had a copyright strike on the media because they're going after people so hard they went after their own man. Yeah. we're just like we're getting all of this out of here. Not helping matters is the fact that Kotaku, because I guess they were a little upset that they were not invited to the preview, because of course they have in the past openly advocated for the pirating of new Switch games. Basically kind of
shocking.
They leaked out very specific unreleased details from Tears of the Kingdom in an article on their site. Now, if you want to, don't worry about avoiding it, because it's spelled out in the headline, and they give you a huge spoiler warning in the article before you get to anything that's really off kilter. But Nintendo is on the warpath for the next 3 days, folks. So mind your P's and Q's and keep your powder dry. Otherwise, a copyright strike is getting ready to fly over your head.
Oh, well, it is what it is. Look, I'm hype as shit for Tears of the Kingdom. We'll get into that in a minute.
Yeah, I'm still. I'll talk about it then. We get into it in a minute then.
That's fine.
So,
look, if you want to purchase your copy of The Legend of Zelda: Tears of the Kingdom legitimately, you can do so by going to densepixels.com/Amazon. Get that Bezos price guarantee, I guess, and presumably it'll be there by Friday.
I would count on that.
Well, that's also true. Yeah. Look, There is no ethical consumption under capitalism, but you can feel at least a little bit better if you shop at densepixels.com/Amazon because they skim just a little bit of that fat off the top for us. And so if you want to throw a bone to the homies here at Dense Pixels, do that. And that brings us to the Dense Pixels post office.
Indeed it does. If you're in our Discord, which you can join by going to densepixels.com/fans, you can ask us questions in the post office just like Johnny did, who says, what is your wrestling theme song guilty pleasure? Talking a song that is so bad, it is just embarrassing that you even remotely like it.
Oh, I don't even know. I don't know enough wrestling themes to weigh in on this.
Now, here's the thing. I wonder how quickly I can get an audio channel set up here because I'm going to play my my theme song.
Oh, good. Okay. All right. Word.
Which is very embarrassing. Mm-hmm. I need to mm-hmm. figure out. Sorry. Tap. Answer another question while I tap to answer.
All right.
Time,
cool. Carrie. All right. Cool. In that case, the Dense Pixels crew is now the Daniel says the Dense Pixels crew is now the main party of the Final Fantasy universe. What is each person's character arc? I don't know. I like to think I would go on a journey, personal journey, very similar to like the Dark Knight to Paladin deal and Final Fantasy IV. But much as I would hope for that journey for myself, I know in reality I would simply be an overpowered side character that dies halfway through the story. Johnny said Micah would end up being a Beastmaster, but for dogs. Love that for him. as for you, Brad, I don't know. I don't know. Would you be our spiky haired protagonist?
Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. Like I don't see. That's the thing. Like I'm not cool enough to be a ranger. So like, but I don't know what class I'd be because ranger is my favorite class. So
okay.
Was that coming through?
No.
It was not? Okay, damn it.
No, I can't hear it.
Okay.
But,
oh, fucking. It's hard. Note to self, don't ever do this shit on the fly. It's a terrible fucking idea. So. Because messing with what you look at. Answer another question. I think I could figure this out in the meantime.
All right,
so.
All right, cool. So many of these are just wrestling specific. T-Wash says, what gimmick or storyline from the WWE or what is a gimmick or storyline from the WWE that you didn't get the point of? Minus the storyline of Heidenreich and Michael Cole. I don't know.
Heidenreich was a terrible character. It is not necessary to know who Heidenreich is, to be quite honest
okay.
with you. Yeah, he's pretty bad.
All right.
I think I figured it out. Hang on a second. We're going to.
Okay.
I did. Okay. Fantastic. So we talked about embarrassing wrestling themes. Yes. I'm just going to let this one rock because it's pretty embarrassing, but God damn it, I can't help myself from loving it. Old school WCW. Here we go.
I still can't hear it, dude. You look like you're having a great
time. It's great. The podcast listeners can hear it, which is what's important. Okay. So.
Okay.
Man called Sting. The man called Sting. He's a man called Sting.
It is the most 80s fucking rock song in the entire world.
Get some of that butt rock.
It's terrible.
In there.
Yes. Man Called Sting is the correct answer to the best the best wrestling theme song. So there you go. Hopefully that came through on the audio. If not, then it's just a lot of silence with me occasionally singing Man Called Sting.
Good.
On the
only one way to find out, and you'll figure that out in post.
I will. I will.
Cam asked, how much longer until Brad makes his jump to real racing?
Oh, so long. I'm terrible at real at virtual racing. Like I have fun doing it, but I'm not good at it. Uh-huh. Like that's the thing. Like I'm fine against the CPU, but when I go online, I get the shit kicked out of me.
Nice.
So, gonna be a while. Always good. Gonna be a while yet.
John C. asks, how insane was that Bad Bunny reaction? I've had Shambay on a loop since then. And shout out to Zelina Vega. She's come a long way since TNA. It makes me happy seeing brown folks shine. We're just not going to talk about the Bianca reaction. Again, I don't know what any of this means.
Bad Bunny, you can look at this on YouTube if you want to. Bad Bunny got like one of the biggest fucking wrestling pops that I've ever seen in my entire life because he was wrestling in a match in San Juan, Puerto Rico, which is his where he's from, essentially. At all, basically, the entire stadium was singing his entrance music, which was one of his like songs that he recorded. It's very cool. It's a very good video. So
nice.
Yeah.
Anthony asks, "How are you enjoying Jedi Survivor? What's your favorite lightsaber stance?"
I think Mike is
I'm playing. Not playing it.
Yeah, I think Mike is playing Jedi Survivor.
Yeah, so neither of us are playing it. We'll revisit that.
He'll have to weigh in on this. I will tell you that I played the first... I played Jedi Fallen Order, and I did not like it. I got a couple hours in. I guess I just don't like fucking Star Wars games, man. Like I think that's just really, really what it boils down to. So
yeah. He also asks, what are your hype levels for the new Zelda coming out? I'm hype as shit! I can't fucking wait, dude. I'm just like, it's coming out at a very good time for me personally. Mm-hmm. It's going to serve as a delightful little distraction. And I'm an enormous Zelda fan. I got this big ass tattoo on my arm for a reason, dude. This cat's name is Ganon. I like Zelda quite a bit. I'm really hype. I'm so hyped to see Ganondorf back. I can't wait to dive into this, honestly.
So I am not hyped for it right now. Because it's too much game for what I'm looking for right now, especially again with what I have coming on the horizon. I'm also very, very concerned about performance on the Switch. Because Breath of the Wild was a launch game, and it didn't run spectacularly. It ran well, but it wasn't like there were definitely times in the game where the frame rate would just fucking fall off a fucking cliff and get annoying. And it's a bigger game. It's a game that's supposedly better as far as like from a technical standpoint on the same hardware. So
here's something I forgot to mention. I finally got a new Switch.
Oh, good for you. I'm happy about that.
I got the Tears of the Kingdom OLED because I had otherwise been running off of a day one 2017 Switch. Mm-hmm. And that shit sounds like a jet engine just trying to run anything else. And I was like, you know what? I'm doing a lot of traveling this year. So I'm going to be playing it in handheld mode more often than I think I have previously. So I'm just like, I'm going to do it. And it is a beautiful little console the way the dock looks comparatively, it's just like, it's really nice. I'm glad I treated myself to it. I don't know. Everything that I've read about the people who got the hands-on time with Tears of the Kingdom said that like it runs fine. Mm-hmm. There's no like, I don't think we're going to run into a Pokemon Scarlet and Violet situation here.
But you understand why I'm afraid, because that did happen 6 months ago.
Absolutely.
Now that being said, I am not one to be immune to a zeitgeist.
Right.
So like, you know, if people in the Discord, if reviewers everywhere are just fucking... just nutting all over this game and just talking about how transcendent it is, which is very likely because it's, you know, Breath of the Wild was there and this looks to be improving on the Breath of the Wild formula and in very many ways. I would not be surprised if I end up getting it quicker than I sort of expect to, but I'm going to try really hard not to get swept up in the zeitgeist. But I am weak-willed and therefore... it very much might happen. So we'll see. We'll see.
Casa asks, Carrie, I'm trying out Pokemon Infinite Fusion and it's absolute madness. What Pokemon would you fuse together to make a net improvement over the base species? This is going to be such a non-answer. I love Pokemon the way that they are. I don't like the Pokemon fusion things are very cute. I don't put a lot of thought into them myself. My favorite Pokemon is like one of the ugliest ones out there. My favorite Pokemon is Pinsir. So I cannot sit here and be like, I would make Pokemon better because so many of my favorites are ones that people think are ugly and bad. So I'm like, give me all my little ugly bug types. Thank you. sorry for the non-answer. It's just it's not something I think about. M. Rogers says, if Starfield doesn't work out for Xbox, what's the actual next thing to even look forward to for them? I don't know, but I also don't know why people are doing the hand-wringing over Starfield in the wake of Redfall. Like, as we discussed. Like,
I think that you're seeing that because, again, you have to remember that we are coming off the backs of, you know, Halo Infinite 18 months ago, which had its share of issues, obviously. When they did show Starfield off last year, it didn't look amazing. And then, of course, they, you know, if they couldn't get Redfall running at 60 frames a second on Xbox Series X, can they get Starfield running at 60 frames a second on Xbox Series X? And I think that's a fair criticism. I mean, you know, that was one of the things we were sold for this console generation. So if it can't pull it off, I feel like that's a problem. So I get where the hand-wringing is coming from. I would just not lump Redfall and Starfield into the same bucket.
They're not even really in the same zip code. No. Like,
and look, Starfield is going to be fucked up when it comes out, but it'll be fucked up in completely different and exciting ways. It'll be
fucked up in the ways that we have all grown to love from Bethesda. I can't wait to see what things spawn out of where in that game. But
what would we look to Microsoft for after Starfield? I don't know, man. Because like the other Perfect Dark, I know that they're working on right now, and so like that's whatever that's going to be. And you know, there's a new Fable eventually coming down the pipe, but we haven't really seen anything. There is. They've officially announced it. So they're working on that right now. And
no one asked for that.
I think there's like three people that are big Fable fans. So
yeah, Peter Molyneux and his parents.
I don't think Peter Molyneux has anything to do with this one. So
yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I think they gave it to a new studio. So I'm not sure. Like I said, everyone's going to be being very attentive to how Starfield releases, though, for sure.
So yeah,
we shall see.
KT says, with the success of The Last of Us series on HBO Max, do you believe video game franchises like Metal Gear Solid or Resident Evil should go that same route instead of the movie route? Yes.
Yeah,
I think much like how it has been how a lot of books have been adapted more successfully as television series. You know, it's still I don't see why a, you know, 20-hour video game should somehow be reduced into a 2-hour movie.
I think that's been one of the big failings of a lot of video game cinema over the years is that they do keep trying to take and adapt these, you know, at least 8 to 10 hour plots. Stories
into these 2-hour cram windows. It down.
Right. And so you miss a lot of context and, you know, a lot of the characters get short shift. Yeah. Metal Gear, if they do ever eventually actually do the Metal Gear Solid thing, should be a streaming series, 10 episodes. I think Resident Evil, you could make something that's much more faithful to the video game if you did a series. So
look, the Resident Evil films are a joy, but they are a joy not because they are Resident Evil. They are simply just, they're good, dumb popcorn movies. But they're not good video game adaptations.
Here's an adaptation that could be very fun. And if they do it right, I think could be potentially a big deal, but it's a little bit more genre niche, so I don't know if it would have as widespread popularity. Ghost of Tsushima would make an excellent series if you were to adapt that.
I haven't played it myself, but sure.
It's real good. It's real good. So if you ever get the chance, highly recommend it.
T-Wash says, if you could see a movie of the real history of any company, who would it be? I would love to see Nintendo and Sega's history with the Yakuza. Yeah, that'd be interesting. I think there's a lot of gaming companies that I think like their history is just naturally kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, I think of the documentary that came out a few years ago about like the goal of finding all of the dumped Atari cartridges in that New Mexico landfill, and how it sort of turned into an interesting little documentary about Atari and about like the developers who worked on those games and stuff like that. You know, I think, you know, it's just I don't know. I think there's a wealth of like really interesting stories just as far as the history of the gaming industry at large. I think given the fact that Nintendo was around as like a toy and card company for 75 years before they put out the Famicom, I think there's a lot to go into there. So yeah, I would love to see something on the history of Nintendo for sure.
I mean, the creation of the PlayStation is interesting just because of the misfire with Nintendo and kind of getting dumped on their ass, and they're basically like, well, we basically made a fucking video game console, so let's make a video game console, and just how that kind of came to market. And that could culminate with like the 95 E3 299 thing, which would be pretty cool. I'm trying to think of developers that would make for an interesting tale.
Honestly, Activision would be a really interesting one because they founded in 1979. Mm-hmm. And they were the first third party developer. So I think by their nature that makes it interesting. You know, their history of that, you know, how they struck out from Atari and shit like that is just I have always found that very interesting.
And I will say that there are, like, to Carrie's point, like there are a lot of documentaries that are already out there around the game industry that are really good. She mentioned the E.T. Landfill one. King of Kong is the one that obviously gets thrown around the most.
King of Kong is an interesting one. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting one now, like 15 years later and whatnot, given how much has changed.
Yep.
God, fuck that guy.
Well, Billy Mitchell is a fantastic asshole.
He's the worst.
Yes, he is. He quite literally is.
The one I was looking at was Atari Game Over, which is a 2014 documentary. Mm-hmm.
It was a documentary series on, I think it was on Paramount Plus, called Console Wars, where it kind of detailed the competition between Nintendo and Sega in the 90s.
That came out in 2020. That's like a hour long documentary that I still need to watch, but There's a decent amount of stuff already out there if you're interested in the sort of documentary style of that sort of thing. If you're interested in more of like what they did with Tetris, which is a heavily dramatized version of what actually happens there, of course. You know, I'm sure they could do, there could be a lot there too with the same sort of topics as well. You know, I still need to watch the Tetris movie.
I have not.
I heard it was okay. Finally, this week, M. Roger said, after five seasons of Drive to Survive, is Daniel Ricciardo at the cross section of most likable and least successful famous driver? And why do all the new guys seem like they have zero personality?
So, the second question first. So, the younger drivers oftentimes seem like they have very limited personality because they don't want to make any waves when they first get on the scene. And I think once they get settled in, you start to see them a little bit more. Good example of this would be like Lando Norris. Like Lando Norris was very much kind of quiet in his first couple of years, and then his personality started to show, and then they told him to tamp it down a little bit, and then he's like, fuck that. Like, I'm just going to kind of be who I am. Also, you have to realize that like a lot of these guys follow we're now coming into the generation of racing driver who grew up idolizing Lewis Hamilton, and Lewis Hamilton is very much like humble and kind of like, you know, very not self-effacing, but like he's very down to earth, or at least appears as such. So you might see a lot of that starting to come through. And like guys like George Russell, who's also a young driver, George Russell is hyper aware of his brand image, and he takes great strides to protect that. So I think as you see guys that are savvier coming in, you'll start to see that as well. Is Daniel Ricciardo the most likable and least successful famous driver? So I think that what people don't realize, especially if they came in during Drive to Survive specifically, Daniel Ricciardo was actually quite successful when he raced for during his Red Bull career. You could mm-hmm. argue that he is the most successful driver of this era to not win a world championship. Like he was a multiple time race winner, had a lot of poles, had a lot of podiums. And when he raced for Red Bull, like he was one of the top drivers in the world. And kind of like, if it wasn't for Lewis Hamilton being Lewis Hamilton, like he very well could have possibly won a world championship somewhere in there. But Lewis Hamilton and Mercedes were just that good, so it was kind of hard for him to get over that hump. So I think that if you only know Daniel Ricciardo from Drive to Survive, you could see that it's like, wow, like this guy is like outsizedly well liked, even though he is kind of shit as a race car driver. And I don't think that's the case. I think that he made a bad choice leaving Red Bull, and the teams that he ended up with did not suit him very well, and that's why he's kind of fallen off from a performance standpoint over the last several years, which sucks because, like I said, Daniel Ricciardo is everyone's favorite Australian driver himbo, who is very funny and very, very, very one of the most liked people on the grid. And it really does suck that he doesn't have a seat this year. So hopefully he can get back to that, and we'll see what happens there.
Nice.
So that is it for the post office, and that means that is it for this week's episode. Don't forget to join our Discord by going to densepixels.com/fans. You can subscribe to the show, as well as all the other TNP Studios shows wherever you download fine podcasts. If you're more of a video person, go to youtube.com/densepixels. Subscribe to the channel while you're there, because we release this podcast in video form every single week. You can also follow us on Twitch at twitch.tv/densepixels, and you can follow our individual channels. I am densepixels Brad, Terrence is apparition410, Carrie is suppets Carrie. That is it for us this week. Thank you all very much for watching and listening, and we'll see you all the next time.
See ya.